Mr. J.P. Morosi, John Paul. Hey.
Yeah.
Nice to have you.
Good morning, baseball fans of Canada. Great to be with you guys this morning. And how about that game last night? As you say, a great night for Mike Trout. Also, I have to make sure we mention Andrew McCutchen, phenomenal as well. His great week continues there with the Pirates and how well they're playing. So, a great night for baseball last night.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we opined about it today, and I think you know, people like yourself that cover it for a living, there's this beautiful game. You know, it's nice that it's not 17-16. That's how it ends up. Who cares who wins? Let's call the game because it's getting too late. Like, it really matters right now. Home field advantage for the World Series, it really matters.
It does. And a few things here, guys. I think the fact that it counts for home field advantage, sometimes you'll hear people complain about it, and I understand those complaints. But I actually think it is the best of our major sports all-star games by a wide margin. It's the best. It's the one that resembles the regular gameplay the most, I think. And really, it's a special night in the summer. And it's a night when the history of the game can be celebrated, but just as easily the present and the future of the game can be celebrated too. 33 first-time All-Stars, and as I mentioned on the broadcast last night, 20 All-Stars who were under the age of 25. So you had such a phenomenal infusion of youth and excitement and new faces. And the whole thing was just a really, really, really good moment for the whole sport. So, and again, Mike Trout, listen, I've been making the point that you go back, the last three All-Star games were a lot about the past. Chipper Jones in 2012, Mariano Rivera in 2013, and Derek Jeter last year. Each of them received a very heartwarming send-off from his All-Star teammates and even his All-Star opponents in his final All-Star game before retiring. But now this year was about the young stars of today, the future of the game. You saw Manny Machado with a great double last night, a beautiful swing to right center field. So it was just, to me, if you're a fan of the game, and we still have a lot of them in the U.S. and Canada, even though people have concerns about the game's interest to young people, still many, many, many baseball fans around the world. And I think last night was a very, very good showcase for all of them, really.
John, when we look back at this game in 20 years from now, is this going to have potentially the most Hall of Famers ever in one game?
You know, that is a great question, George, because I think that, and that speaks to the youth. And I think the fact that we have not even seen yet, This is the best part. We have not even seen yet the best of Mike Trout. We haven't seen yet the best of Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or certainly Chris Bryant just now coming into the league. So all these young players that have just now arrived, Jock Peterson, one more who was phenomenal in the Home Run Derby on Monday night. So yeah, that's a great call. That may very well be the case. And it's just the youth that we're seeing and the talent there. And Mike Trout, I mean, listen, first ever back-to-back All-Star Game MVP in the history of the game.
82 years.
They've handed out the award since the early 1960s. But still, there have been a lot of really pretty great players that have played baseball since the early 1960s. So that's a really, really good sign, and I think something that's a great message for the game's future.
John Paul Morosi joins us. I know it was a late night for you, of course, being you're in Cincinnati, I would assume, correct?
Yes, and you can probably hear it in my voice, a bit of the morning after talking a lot. So it was great. It was a phenomenal event, and really, I think you look at a lot of the things that are still great about the game, and I tell you what, too. The P. Rose aspect.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Were you there? Cool. Were you there for the applause? Because it was like a minute 30. And yeah. I wanted to ask you about the aspect of P. Rose, which I find very interesting. And it gets even more interesting when stuff like that happens. He's allowed in the stadium. Does Rob Manfred, just because of that reaction yesterday, have more to consider when he sits down and talks to Pete?
It's a great question, Dean. And I think he's going to keep it separate. I really do. I think that we knew, everybody in the ballpark knew there would be a tremendous ovation, and there was. And I think Rob Manfred knew that. I think he intellectualized that, understood it. And first of all, full marks to him for allowing Pete Rose to be part of the celebration. And in fact, I asked the commissioner about it yesterday about the decision, because under the terms of Pete Rose's banishment from the game, if you will, he is not allowed to participate in really any official capacity, even a ceremonial one, without the particular assent from the commissioner. The commissioner has to give his blessing. And so when all the planning was going into this months, years out, and the request was made to Rob Manfred, I asked him, you know, why did you grant him permission to be part of the celebration last night? And he basically said the rule that he violated has to do with the integrity of the winning and losing of games. And in Rob Manfred's judgment, obviously, being there in a ceremonial capacity was not something that had anything to do with impacting who was going to win that game last night. And I thought that was very interesting. Mm. And he also said, listen, this is a showcase for our game and for this city in particular. I wanted to give the fans what they wanted to see, and that was the fact they wanted to see Pete Rose and they wanted to give him a huge ovation. So I think that speaks to the fact that we have in baseball a very open-minded, very reasonable commissioner, a guy that gets it, a guy that I think wants what's best for the game. And last night, frankly, what was best for the game was for the people of Cincinnati to go completely bonkers for their hometown guy, a guy that grew up in that town, was born in that town. And I think that was what we had to see, I think, for the good of baseball. And Rob Manfred allowed him to make that happen. And to Pete's credit, even last night on Fox Sports 1 after the game was over, Pete gave a lot of credit to the commissioner, apart from whatever's going to happen at their meeting, which will happen in the next couple of months. He was very, very grateful towards Rob Manfred. So I thought that was a very good sign on Pete's behalf. It was well done. I think there was a lot of class shown by a lot of people in what could have been sort of an awkward moment. I think there was nothing awkward about it. It was a beautiful moment and a great moment for baseball.
John, I know that Pete has to admit to a lot of things before he actually gets reinstated by baseball, but is one of the biggest hurdles that he actually wants to get back into the game as in some sort of capacity, maybe even a manager? Is that the biggest stumbling block in all this?
Well, I think that is the essence of the issue, and that is why he's applying for reinstatement. That speaks to what happened last night, what happened in 1999 at the All-Century team. He's still able to do these types of things. But what the banishment prohibits him from doing is, as Rob Manfred said yesterday in our interview, it prohibits him from being involved in positions that are proximate the field of play and or the organizations that would render him the ability to impact the outcome. And I think that is what obviously that's still the lingering ethical concern for the game is, do we welcome him back into a capacity where he can impact the game? And that is where there were the revelations recently still in the last couple of months from ESPN about information suggesting that he betted on baseball as a player, which he had previously denied. So there are a lot of intricacies here. But yeah, that's very much, George, the crux of the issue here. He can have a ceremonial role in as things presently are constructed. And frankly, it's important to note, it was the Hall of Fame that subsequent to him being banned created a rule that said if you're on the ineligible list, you can't be in. So that's an entirely separate process. And the Hall of Fame, even if Pete's reinstated, the Hall of Fame is far from a slam dunk because his time for the writer's ballot's already up. He'd have to be considered by the Veterans Committee, and the Veterans Committee typically doesn't want anybody to get in. So it's a very tough road there with the Hall of Fame. But yes, to answer your question, it's all about that. It's all about the question of, does baseball want him back in a position that allows him to impact games? And so we'll see what the commissioner decides here probably in the next couple months.
John Paul Morosi joins us, Major League Baseball insider, Fox Sports, talking about not just Pete Rose, last night's All-Star game. You are in Cincinnati. You got a chance to watch Aroldis Chapman mow three guys down with 103-mile-an-hour smoke. You saw Cueto yesterday. I mean, There are some chips out there and some rumors as well that Toronto is in hot pursuit of at least one of those guys. What do you know about that and the possibilities more than likely when it comes to Toronto and obtaining some help with their starting rotation?
Well, I checked on this with someone yesterday, Dina, and what I was basically told is that the Jays are staying busy on a number of fronts. They're asking any potential sellers where they're at with their rotations. San Diego is one of them that's now moved into the possible seller position. Texas as well with Giovanni Gallardo. The White Sox potentially there with Jeff Samardzija. So my understanding is the Jays have had a lot of conversations, like Alex Anthopoulos always does, a lot of conversations, but it does not appear that anything is close. And I think that part of it depends on the decisions made by those clubs here shortly. And I think that the Reds have been holding off on that sell decision for a long time. They may wake up today. That's the unknown. Their owner, Bob Castellini, is a very competitive guy. They may wake up today and say, you know what, we got to the All-Star game in a respectable way, and now we need to take the team apart and start trading guys. And if that happens, Blue Jays could have a starting pitcher from Cincinnati by the end of the week. You know, it's one of those things that we don't know. But, again, I would tell you this, that I want to emphasize, I was told the Jays are not close on anything. So from that standpoint, it would be surprising if that's what happened, as I said, about the Jays potentially getting somebody from Cincinnati. I think that's a possibility, but there's nothing imminent, nothing close at all on that end of things. And guys, I would tell you, the concern I would have is that maybe the Jays waited too long to make a move. Maybe the time to do this was a couple weeks ago, even though this is the time of the year when you have overpays in terms of pitching, or you could even go back further and say that this team needed more rotation depth during the offseason, which I would probably say is true. So it's a club that we know what the Jays do well, know what they don't do well. And I think that now is a very, very delicate and important weeks ahead between now and July 31st for Alex Anthopoulos to try his best to get some pitching to pair with what has been really an offense that's the talk of baseball. People here talking about the Blue Jays and how impressive they've been offensively. This is something that now that obviously they have to address the pitching if they want to have any chance of catching the Yankees, who look a lot better, guys, than I thought they would be this season.
Yeah, and then that's my concern. You touched on it, too. Not only are the Yankees and pretty much every team in a very muddy AL East trying to do the same thing the Jays really have to do, but the other part of this is that, you know, if they did wait too long, they're 4.5 games out now. You know, they really, really, and I mean, I stress this, and I think I speak for the collective Blue Jays fan when I say, you know, you can't wait. Like this, you say by the end of the week.
No.
I think the more they wait, the less of a bargaining position Alex is going to be in with the uppers to be able to sell this and say, hey, listen, now we're 7 games out, I still want to do this. The word no will be easier to say for everybody above him.
Well, absolutely, and it's a very good, very, very good call. And I think I want to make the point that there's so much talk now about, oh my gosh, well, the Jays have to make this trade because of the Stroman injury in spring training, and that's why they have to make this move and why they're in such a pitching deficit. I would answer to that question by saying the Jays, the time to go out there and make this move for pitching is probably November or December. And the price only gets up as you go into the season, because then your markets, your options in the market are reduced because you have to only go the trade route as opposed to free agency. And the off season is the time to build up the strength of your organization. And that's the time to go out there and make sure that you have the depth to withstand the injuries. The St. Louis Cardinals are without their best pitcher and their most accomplished position player over the last 6 years in Matt Holliday. They're without Adam Wainwright, as I mentioned. They've had a number of injuries. John Jay, they're starting center fielder for the last few years. He's out, and they still have the best record in baseball. So losing Stroman, while it's been pointed out as this exceptional thing, is actually normal baseball. Normal baseball says you're probably going to lose one of your starting pitchers at some point in time in the year, and you've got to have a good enough organization to withstand that. and we're seeing the Jays tested. And if they don't make a move, then I don't think we can say, "Oh, well, it was just a fluky thing where the right pitcher didn't avail himself on the trade market, and really it was a well-conceived club." But to me, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. I think that's a finger-pointing thing that's not really a fair and justifiable way to go about things. The time to make this team good was November and December, and now if the Jays miss the playoffs, I think it will be because of what didn't happen then, as opposed to what's not going to happen over the next couple of weeks.
John, we know that apparently Alex prefers to grab a pitcher with some control, but if they acquire a Samardzija or a Cueto, is there any chance those guys sign an extension before heading free agency?
No, I would tell you no. And here's one reason why. That because of the new rules, especially, set aside the fact that I think all players of substance, once they enter their final seasons of their contracts, almost all of them, as long as they perform well, they'll just take it to free agency, no matter how much they like that city. We've seen, and more often than not, they're going to leave the team they're on. We saw that with Albert Pujols. We saw that with Robinson Cano. Both of them had won championships with their franchises, and they were offered a lot of money to stay there, and they turned it down and went somewhere else. But remember, too, with the way the qualifying offer works in this system, the fact that you're traded at the middle of the season and you can't have a qualifying offer on you at the end of the season, at the end of the year, which of course holds down your value. The fact that the qualifying offer goes away if you're traded is huge. That's a tremendous incentive to go out there in the open market, because then the team acquiring you doesn't have to give up a draft pick. They're going to give you more money. So it acts as a multiplier. If you're traded, in fact, it makes it like a no-brainer that you're going to go to free agency, because you're going to make yourself a lot more money, and you know, maybe not a lot more in like percentage terms, but a lot more like in like real people terms. You might get an extra $5 or $10 million, maybe even more than that. So I mean, it is a slam dunk lock. I think the players, when they're traded, they're going to go to free agency.